BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello and welcome to a very special bonus episode of the Life Hacks podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate you listening. On this podcast, we chat to amazing people who've hacked their life to make it better, but this episode's a little bit different. In this one, I'm speaking to Jade Thirlwall from Little Mix, all about when she was treated for anorexia nervosa as a teenager. It's a really great episode for you to listen to if you're struggling with an eating disorder yourself, maybe you have in the past or know somebody who is or has, or maybe you just want to hear how Jade coped during that difficult time. If you don't want to listen to this right now, there are loads of other Life Hacks episodes with other amazing people over on BBC Sounds.
Radio 1's Life Hacks.
I'm currently driving along Snake Pass, got beautiful rolling green hills around me and keep seeing sheep. It really is a nice drive, this. I'm actually travelling from Manchester to Sheffield for a really important reason today. Now, on Radio 1, I interview loads of different pop stars. One band I particularly love is Little Mix, and I've chatted to them before, but I've never actually spoken to Jade Thirlwall from the band about the fact that she used to have anorexia nervosa when she was a teenager. Something that I didn't know is that anorexia actually has the highest mortality rate of any psychiatric disorder. I was quite surprised by that. So today, after chatting to Jade about her experience, I'm actually going to take her to meet and surprise two teens called Megan and Marissa. Now, I've been getting to know these two lovely girls already. They're 14 years old and they're currently in hospital receiving treatment for anorexia. Thank you so much, Jade, for coming all the way to Sheffield for us. So before we meet Megan and Marissa, will you tell us a little bit about your experiences with the illness?
So I think my anorexia stemmed from my granddad passing away when I was 13. I was getting bullied quite badly at school. My mum and dad were arguing a lot, and I felt like there were so many things that I couldn't control. And yeah, I guess the anorexia started as a way of, yeah, controlling something. I felt like not eating was the one thing that I had control over and damaging my body.
And at the time, did you realise that's what you were doing, that you were having control?
Yeah, I guess I kind of thought it was normal. I was quite a lonely person, I was on my own a lot, and for me it was kind of like weirdly like my own sort of dark secret that I kept to myself. You know, it wasn't for like a year and a half or so that my mum even realised that I was struggling, and I guess I was sort of satisfied with that. That was my only thing that I could do to myself and nobody knew about, and it started from those things happening in my life, and then gradually I would sort of look in the mirror and, you know, I was never skinny enough. I started to have this sort of body dysmorphia where it was just never enough to just be who I was.
I'm always really fascinated about whether it comes from control or whether it comes from body image issues or whether it's a bit of both, because when I met Megan and Marissa and spoke to them and some of the other girls at the eating disorder hospital, it kind of seemed like both things were an issue.
Yeah, I think this sort of come into one eventually. It definitely started with the control thing, and then I think as time went on and I started to notice a difference in my body and realise I was getting smaller and smaller, I then became obsessed with that sort of way of looking and feeling about myself. And I guess it wasn't until actually, I think I was about 15 and I was at school and I was starting to see a counsellor. I would talk to her about all these things, and the one thing I never spoke to her about was my anorexia, because I knew she would do something about it if I said anything.
So leading up to that, were there any sort of symptoms that you had that you thought, oh, something's not right here, I've gone too far, or...?
I mean, obviously I became very small and my ribs were sticking out, I was very gaunt, and I used to wear a lot of baggy clothes to hide that. And I think in my head, I felt so down and so depressed about everything that was going on in my life at that moment. I really just wanted to sort of waste away.
So you didn't really care that you were getting ill and it was killing you, because you're like, well, I'm miserable anyway, that's why I'm doing it.
Yeah, I got in a really horrible state, and I was, you know, I had a couple of core friends, one of my best friends who I live with now actually, who was with me through it all. And we kind of, before I went to hospital, we had this big intervention where my mum brought around my house and they tried to force us to eat. And I was just so horrible to everyone. I got in a really horrible mental state where I was just mean to everyone. And I guess because I was so low on energy, because I wasn't eating, and I was just sad all the time, and I would take it out on my mum, and it really had a damaging effect, like, within my family. My mum and dad were arguing more and more, and my brother was, you know, really upset about it all. And I kind of knew I was having this damaging effect on everyone, but I just couldn't stop.
When did you start to get better then?
I think the turning point for me, and the reason why I first told my counsellor, was because I guess I got tired of just hating myself so much. It was a really horrible hole to be in. It got to a point where I knew I needed somebody else to tell. Because harbouring a horrible secret like that is really damaging to your mental health and obviously to my physical health. And I think I just had that moment where I was like sitting in the session, and I remember it really well, where I just sort of blurted it out. And the relief I felt when I told someone that I thought I was anorexic and I hated the way I looked and I enjoyed doing it to myself. It was like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders. It wasn't this horrible burden anymore that I was carrying. The minute I started to actually talk to people about it was the minute I started to get better. And then I guess the second turning point for me was when I was at hospital and the doctors taught me that I would actually die if I kept doing it. And I think to hear somebody say that to you is actually quite scary. And also I guess I started to realise how damaging it was for my family. I'd become so selfish with how I felt about myself. I forgot that I had family and friends around us who were also now really hurting because of what I was doing. So yeah, I guess those were the three moments where I thought, right, you need to book your ideas up.
So is it something you have to think about now?
It's weird for me because I feel like me having anorexia is literally like a different person.
Yeah.
Like, I don't associate it at all with who I am now. Because I got through it, and I honestly, like, hand on heart, don't think I would ever do that to myself again, because I realised how life-changing it was to become better. And interestingly, actually, the last time I went to the hospital was when I was going to audition for X Factor. And I was getting better, and they were going to discharge me anyway, and I went to the hospital and I said to the doctor, like, I've got an audition for X Factor and I really want to do it. And he said, are you sure you're ready for that? Because, you know, you're only just getting better and I don't know if you'll be ready. And I said, like, if I get through this audition, that'll, like, sort of inspire me more to stop doing it, because I wanted to change my life and I wanted to be a singer. And I wouldn't have ever been able to achieve that had I stayed anorexic, really. There's been so many times, and even the girls have said, God, how are you fine with that, where I've put a bit of weight on, and the press, like, oh, Jade's put weight on, like, is she having a baby and all this rubbish? And if that had been 10 years ago, someone saying that to me would have sent me into overdrive, and I literally would have stopped eating, I would have been beside myself. And now I literally see stories like that in the press and I laugh, and then I grab a cookie and stuff and say, like, honestly, it's like, I just don't associate it with that the older person that I was anymore. When I see the girls, that's one thing I'll say to them is, you know, if you really want to do what your dreams are in life or achieve something, you have to get better. It does get better, and I know exactly how they feel when, you know, when it was happening to me, I literally did not see an end to it. I didn't see a light in the tunnel. I thought, this is just how I'm going to be.
Well, I'm sure that Megan and Marissa are going to absolutely love meeting you today and are going to be completely inspired by your story. But first, let's have a little listen to what they've had to say to me previously. I've got to know them both really well. This is Marissa, who's 14 years old, and she had anorexia for 3 years without realising before finding out on Instagram.
I saw this post on Instagram and this girl had put it on, and it said something about losing a period, and I had lost mine last May. So I messaged her and I was like, oh, is it like a normal thing? And then it turns out she'd recovered from anorexia, and she just asked me some questions. She was like, I think you have an eating disorder, I think you should talk to your parents. I kept putting it off. And then I sent my mum like a text message. Then I went to school and I was like fretting. And then when I came home, she was so sweet about it. She said, I've booked a doctor's appointment.
So losing your period is quite a common thing to happen, I believe, isn't it? When you have an eating disorder.
When like I got the actual diagnosis of anorexia nervosa, I was like, what? You know, like, cause like, I can't see myself as like everyone else says I am. And it's so confusing and frustrating. And it's like, well, they wouldn't lie to me, but why can't I see myself as that? And the following Wednesday, I went into General Hospital and I stayed there for, I think, 2 weeks. Two reasons. One, because I was underweight, and two, because my heart rate was really, really low, and my organs were starting to shut down from not eating. Before that, I think it's like 2 years, but I've been having like heart pains and stuff, and I kind of just shrugged it off. But now we know now that basically my heart was shutting down, and like I'm still coming to terms that like I could have died if I hadn't have said anything.
It's really scary, really scary. When you haven't spoke to anyone yet, you do feel like, you know you're hurting yourself, but you just think, oh, you know, you don't really understand the seriousness of it until you actually sit down. And yeah, like my period stopped as well, and I thought, oh, well, you know, it's just a side effect of doing what I'm doing. I didn't realise that I was gradually, like, destroying my body more and more.
Yeah, you don't think about why they've stopped, what's going on in there for that to have happened.
Yeah.
That must be a real wake-up call, especially if you've kind of felt like you've not been doing anything wrong that whole time.
Yeah. And if anything, like, it sounds quite twisted, but I was not proud of myself, but I knew I was having the effect that I wanted on my body. Like, I was destroying myself, and that's what I intended to do. But I think when you're actually told by someone, and especially by a doctor, that you're going to die if you keep doing what you're doing, and especially if someone says that in front of your mum or someone that you really love, it is really a hard moment and horrible pill to swallow.
Yeah. I mean, we think of mental health problems as obviously just that, mental problems, but, you know, they are killers. In fact, anorexia's got the highest mortality rate of any other psychiatric disorder, which really surprised
me. Really? That is crazy.
Isn't it?
I didn't know that.
No, me neither. I was really, really shocked by that. The other teenager that I spent some time with is Megan. She's also 14. She's had anorexia for 2 years. And she spoke to me a little bit about how she sort of feels guilty when she eats and how she punishes herself for that. And I was really quite shocked by what she had to say.
You're eating sort of once you tweet, like, basically, like, porridge, like, things that don't taste very nice. Sometimes you think, oh, yeah, I don't deserve to have nice food.
So it's not just about eating less. It's also that almost as a punishment to yourself, as a bit of self-harm to yourself, you want to not enjoy the food, so
yeah,
you want
definitely.
The tasteless stuff, yeah.
At the moment, I'm working on just, like, enjoying things again, because even, like, sleeping in bed, I can't do. So it's just working on, the little things.
How come you can't do sleeping in bed?
Because I, like, sleep on the floor for, like, a punishment reason. Like, you've eaten all the day, so you have to sleep on the floor to, like, punish yourself, really. You can't be comfortable.
Is that something you still do now?
Yeah.
Wow. That really shows me as well that, again, self-harm is something that, you know, there is a typical image of self-harm.
Yeah.
And actually there are lots of different ways to punish yourself and harm yourself, aren't there? And that's not one that I had come across before.
Mm. Well, hearing Megan's story about punishing herself is really shocking and so sad. It's awful. But I guess that's the thing, every girl's story is different, I guess, and different ways of dealing with it or how they've punished themselves or trying to get through it. So
yeah, like you say, every mental health story is completely different, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Marissa says that anorexia has a voice for her.
It makes me sound crazy, but it's like kind of a voice, and it's just like, it's just always there. And then when there's food in front of you, don't eat that, you don't eat that, you don't eat lunch. Well, the first rule was like, don't eat lunch. And then, like I said, it spiralled. It just went, no breakfast. Oh, no, you don't eat sweets. Oh, no, no potato. No, you don't have oil on stuff. And it just started cutting out loads and loads of food. And it makes like these rules. And when you look back at them now, they're just stupid, but they mean so much to you and it's so hard to break them.
So, of course, the voice is saying horrible things to you. We often say that, you know, we speak to ourselves sometimes like we're speaking to our worst enemy, but we would never say those things to our friends.
Yeah.
You would never presumably say to your friends, oh, you're fat, don't eat that, but you'll say, you know, your voice, your internal voice says it to yourself. Do you kind of see that voice as a friend or a bully?
Like when I say it out loud now, it makes it sound like it's a bully, like, but then at the same time, I do kind of see it as a friend.
Megan, does it have a voice for you?
Yeah.
What's that voice like? Does it have a name? Does it have a sound?
I call it Ella, and I can actually, like, I know what she looked like. She has, like, she's told me, like, a background story of her so I can, like, relate to her and become a friend to her. So she is a friend to me.
What kind of things does she say to you when you're at your worst with the eating disorder then?
That I don't deserve a life, that I should just give up, that no one loves me, that I'm just getting fatter and fatter each day, and that when I go home, everyone won't talk to me and I'll just be alone in this world, not happy, so I might as well just stop eating and become my target weight, like my dream weight.
And do you believe those things when she says them to you?
Yeah.
How old is she?
14.
14. I mean, I don't even know what to say. That's, like, really harrowing to me. It's just awful. I relate to the whole idea of the anorexia sort of being a person. I guess that sort of doing that to yourself also makes it easier to cope with it, I guess, when you sort of personify that, the problem.
Yeah, like someone else is doing it to you.
Yeah, yeah. That sort of anorexia voice for me, it sounds really weird, but to me, I saw that as like the angel on my shoulder at first. Because to me, like, anorexia for me was control. And if I was controlling something, then I was winning. And I guess it wasn't until I actually went to hospital and spoke and had therapy about it that I realised that that was actually the devil on my shoulder. That was, you know, was really not my friend. And I really struggled to understand that at first, I think, because I was so isolated and didn't talk to anyone about how I was feeling. The only sort of thing I spoke to about it was that voice. And I'd got so used to just hearing that voice telling us, don't eat that, or look in the mirror, like, you're still ugly, you still have a long way to go. And it took a long time to realise that that voice wasn't good for us anymore. Yeah. I'm actually really looking forward to meeting both the girls, and I hope she can talk to me about that, and I can tell her that I've also felt like that, and I became okay after it.
And you've really praised therapy and how much that helped you, and Megan is going through that at the moment, and she's sort of finding a new way to deal with that voice in her therapy sessions.
I'm trying to, at the moment, change the way that she thinks.
That's amazing. So rather than getting rid of her...
Yeah.
..you're just changing the messages she gives you.
Yeah.
So hopefully it'll get to a point where the messages she's giving you is that you are...
Like, well done for eating.
Well done for eating, you deserve to eat.
Yeah.
Life's worth living, you are worthy of this, there's nothing wrong with your body.
Yeah.
The positive messages that you need to hear rather than the negative ones.
Because everyone has an inner critic. It's just, like, you'll look at someone and go, oh... they look awful trousers, and that's your inner critic. But for me, my inner critic is my friend and my eating disorder and someone I have to listen to, really. Otherwise, she'll get really mad at me and start shouting and I'll have to exercise or self-harm or do crazy things.
I think you're right. I think everybody does have that inner voice.
I'm trying to, in my therapy sessions, they're suggesting, like, instead of her being a bully to you, then try and make her... be more nice to you and, like, make you feel more confident. So it's not like I'm losing her, it's like I'm rediscovering her.
I love that that's what's happening in her therapy sessions. I think that sounds really smart, do you?
Yeah. I can't believe how well they talk about it.
Oh, they're such
wise
girls.
They talk about it better than I am. Like, that's amazing, isn't it? That she can understand what that voice is and how it was not good for her and how she's trying to learn... to turn it around. Like, that's incredible that she's even aware of that at that age and can speak about it so eloquently. It's incredible. So she should be really proud of herself for that. And she's right. It is, you know, everyone's got that voice in the head, but that voice should be at the sidelines, like a cheerleader cheering you on, like, yes, you're doing great, do you know what I mean? Instead of bringing you down every 2 minutes.
Yes, so, queen.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess it is. She's so right. It's about... you know, changing that voice into something positive and having it as an actual friend and not, you know, that bully friend that you have at school that, like, pretends they're your mate but always puts you down a bit. You know, that's kind of what that voice is originally. So it's amazing that she's recognising that.
Really shows the power of that therapy she's having as well, though, doesn't it?
Like, incredible. And it's obviously, you know, I think the first sign of overcoming something with your mental health is to recognise where it's coming from.
So that voice that anorexia has, do you ever hear that now? Do you ever have to shut it up? Does it say different things to you now? Does it go, yes, Jade, you're doing great?
Yeah, I think everyone's got a voice. And I think for me, you know, I am human and there are times that I do have that voice saying, oh, you look like crap. But I've learnt to just sort of shut it off a bit more now or... turn it into something positive.
Every now and again, that voice just says something really horrible, but you're just like, well, you're an idiot.
Just... Yeah, it's just learning to understand that it's a stupid thought and...
You don't have to listen to it?
No, you really don't have to.
Are you looking forward to meeting the girls?
I'm really, really looking forward to seeing the girls. I actually think this is going to be good for me as well, because I haven't talked to anyone like about it that's gone through the same thing that I went through for years and years, and I think, you know, it's going to be helpful for me too, and I'm so excited to talk to the girls, and, you know, and hopefully I can walk away today feeling like I've helped them in some way.
So shall we go to the hospital and meet them?
Yes.
Oh, I'm excited to see them again.
Okay, so here we are, Jay. This is Riverdale Grange Hospital. It's really nice, isn't it?
It looks beautiful.
It's kind of not what you'd expect. It doesn't look really clinical.
No.
It looks like someone's home, doesn't
really
it?
Really nice home, yeah. Does
so
it?
So we're about to go in and surprise Megan and Marissa.
Oh, I'm a bit nervous.
Are you?
Yes.
No, they're going to absolutely love you.
And they don't know who's coming to see them.
Okay, let's knock on the door.
Hi guys, it's me again. Nice to see you both. I've brought someone to meet you.
I'm so excited.
It's Jade from Little Mix.
Oh, that is a lovely reaction.
Hello. Oh, that's nice. I was hoping it was going to be awkward. Thank God for that. You all right?
Sorry to spring that on you like a bit of a shock.
Oh, let me. Should I squish in the middle? Okay, who's Megan and who's Marissa?
I'm Marissa.
All right.
Marissa and Megan.
I can't believe it.
I know.
Well, we've been chatting to Jade today. I've been having a good chat with Jade. She actually used to have anorexia when she was a teenager, and we thought it'd be really lovely for you guys to talk to Jade and ask her any questions you've got, because she totally knows what you're going through. She's been there, and she's looking forward to having a chat with you.
Obviously, I haven't really spoken about it in depth properly with anyone, really, let alone other girls that have gone through the same thing. So
how long did it take you to recover?
Well, I think I went to hospital when I was about 16. Mm-hmm. And I was discharged when I was 18.
Oh, my God. Why?
So, it took a couple of years. 18 was when I actually did the X Factor. Yeah. Mm. And I guess having that goal, knowing, you know, what I wanted to do in life, I couldn't have done it if I hadn't have got over my anorexia.
How did you not fall back then?
Well, I knew I would sort of ruin my chances of what I wanted to become in life, and what my dream was obviously to be a singer, be a performer, and I didn't want to ruin my own chances of that, do you know what I mean? So that was one big thing.
So do you think being on an X Factor and being successful has made you, like, better now?
I wouldn't say being, like, a pop star, being, you know, being, like, successful in that field sort of recovered me from it. I think it was more the idea of, you know, what do you want to do when you're
older?
Well,
I want to be a detective.
Well, there you go. If you want to be a detective, you know, you've got a goal that you want to achieve in your life, and, you know, you don't want to get in your own way of that and punish yourself and stop yourself from achieving that dream. Do you know what I mean? You know, being famous still has a lot of downsides. Like, people constantly talk about the way I look. If I put a little bit of weight on, people talk about it straight away, and it's pictured, and there's unflattering photos. It could have been very easy for me to feel horrible about myself and then, you know, stop eating again. But I've learned how to deal with that in a different way.
Do you still struggle now?
No.
That's so good.
Yeah. Honestly, I still have times where I'll feel a bit depressed, or I'll feel sad or down about something, but I now don't associate that with eating anymore. So, you know, back when I was anorexic, if I was feeling upset or depressed or felt like I couldn't control what was going on at home or at school, my way of dealing with that was to not eat. Whereas, you know, now that I've come out of the other side of that, I don't ever associate sadness or anger with eating anymore. It's two completely separate things, and I don't punish myself in that way anymore.
Do you ever still feel like guilty now when after, like, you've eaten something or anything?
I think only as guilty as, like, the average human would.
like, if I have two desserts at a restaurant, I'll think that was pushing it a bit, Jade, yeah. Settle down. But I don't feel, like, guilty about just eating normally.
Yeah. Megan's face, Megan can't believe it. But here you go, Megan, this is somebody who, like you, was in hospital because she had anorexia. But it just shows that you can get better, you can get so much better.
100%. For so long I had this voice that was just constantly negative and draining, and for a long time I thought that was, like, my friend telling me to not eat or, yeah, to deprive myself of food and not look in the mirror and think for once that I looked nice, or, you know, how I not think that I could control what was happening around us in any other way. So, yeah, I felt like that for a long, long time. And once I sort of had a lot of therapy, obviously went to hospital, spoke to my family and friends about how I was feeling, and it gradually got better, and now that voice is, like, it's a normal voice that everyone else has. It's just not as annoying all the time.
What do you think helped most to make it, like, quieter?
I think listening more to other people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I know if someone had told me 10 years ago, Jade, you look really beautiful, I wouldn't have believed them at all. And I'd have this voice in my head going, no, that's stupid, don't believe them. Do you know what I mean? Because if you think a certain way about yourself, but 10 other people in the room think differently, there's obviously something not right there. They're probably the people that are correct, not you.
What was, like, your worst moment, do you think?
Probably the first day that I had to go to hospital, because I don't think I really realised the seriousness of the situation. And I remember, like, my mum and dad had a bit of a breakdown over it, and it was the first time I'd seen, like, my dad cry, and my brother was really upset, and I think that was the first time it really dawned on us that I was really doing something terrible to myself. And I remember the doctor told me that if I kept going the way I did, that I would die if I kept destroying my body. And that was, like, really scary. Because I think for a long time I'd sort of, obviously when you're anorexic, you know, you kind of know what you're doing, you know that you're hurting yourself, but you don't really care.
I don't even think, when I was, like, really ill, I don't even think I knew I was hurting myself.
Yeah, I think for a long time, like, for me, I know that I sort of convinced myself that I was, like, doing the right thing for myself, because, you know, I just hated who I was. I hated everyone around us. I was so, like, sad and miserable. And then when I went to the hospital the first day and I was told the seriousness, and obviously I saw how upset my family were, that was when I thought, oh, wow, like, I've really hurt the people around us as well, and I felt really awful about that, and I felt really scared that I'd really gone really far with it. But it was also, like, well, that was probably one of the worst points. It was good to finally realise that and have a moment of, like, what have I done? Do you know what I mean? No, honestly, I can't remember the last time I looked at calories on a bit of food, and I used to obsess over it. I was really obsessed with weighing myself as well, which obviously my mum didn't know for a long time, so eventually we got rid of the scales, and now, literally, I've never weighed myself for years. Since I've recovered, obviously it's important when you're learning how to get better so you can gain weight, but it's learning how to not obsess over, like, these things that are just numbers, really. Yeah. You know, and if you want to get better and be healthier, you will gradually learn how to not become so obsessed with it. And it does happen. I know when you are anorexic, it's really hard to see that it's going to get better. I think you've just got to have a bit of faith in yourself. Yeah. You've got yourself this far,
yeah.
And, you know, that's not to say if you're struggling or you need someone to talk to, you can't call someone or
speak. I'll call you now.
Well, there you go. There you go. So, yeah, you're just remembering that you're not going to be alone. You're going to be fine.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, when I used to have therapy, I used to hate before going in. I'd be like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to talk to someone. I don't want to do it. And then as soon as I'd get in there and I'd walk out after my session, I would feel so much better. I don't know if you feel like
that
sometimes.
Did you ever feel, like, guilty, though, after?
Guilty for what?
Like, going against your eating disorder and, like, talking to someone.
Like, betraying it.
Yeah.
I know what you mean, yeah. Because I guess you get so used to having that sort of little person in your ear saying, this is what you should be doing, this is what you should be eating. And it does take time, and it takes therapy to learn how to sort of transform that voice into something positive. So, yeah, I do know what you mean. Do you still get that feeling of guilt still now?
Yeah, all the time.
But I do realise now, like, I don't ever want to go back to what I used to be like. Mm-hmm. So I am, like, getting on the path, but it's just, like, still you get that massive guilt for doing it.
But that's amazing that you already, like, recognise that you don't want to be how you were before. Mm. Like, that's a massive milestone in your recovery, to know you never want to be like that again. So the only way is up, really, from there. Yeah. And it's all right to still feel a bit guilty or still feel like you're not 100% yet. Do you know what I mean? You're a human being, it's normal. You can't change how you feel overnight.
So do you, like, look at other celebrities and, like, go, oh, I want to be like her, or, like, everyone's perceiving her as, like, the best looking or anything?
Not anymore. I think I used to. Like, when I first entered the industry, because it was such a shock as well, and so many people were talking about how I looked and your weight and all that sort of thing. I would look at other celebrities and be like, oh, I wish I looked like her, or, you know, I wish I was as skinny as her. And, you know, maybe that was maybe me still having a tiny little negative voice in my ear. But I've just learnt to love myself a bit more. And it's, honestly, it's very liberating when you do. You should try it.
It's really good.
Megan, it's really good.
Megan, your face then, you just looked in absolute disbelief at the at the sheer thought of somebody loving themselves.
I promise you, that's not to say, like, I am human and I still have days where, like, I'll wake up and I'll look in the mirror and think, oh, God, you look a bit rough, hon. Like, I still have days where I feel a bit poo, and that's normal. Mm. But it's just knowing how to, like, rationalise that and be like, OK, that's normal, I'm a human. You know, some days I'm going to feel a bit rubbish. But instead of, you know, punishing myself for that and hating myself for feeling that way, I'll be like, OK, that's how I feel, but here's what I'm going to do to feel better about it. Or, you know, I'm going to spend the day with friends or positive people that make me feel better about myself, you know? And I can promise you, like, while right now you might feel like you're not going to feel that way, I promise you will with time. Because, and if I tell you, like, when I was younger, and I'd say when I was, like, 14, 15, I absolutely hated myself. Like, I hated the way I looked. I hated everything about myself. And now I literally don't even see that as the same person. Like, that to me, that I can't even remember feeling that way. Like, I wouldn't be able to feel like that ever again, where I hated myself that much. I promise you, you can do it as well.
It just made me feel, like, really motivated and, like, inspired and stuff.
And you just not got to look at the calories, so I'm just glad that I can see that there is light.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's been such an emotional day. I'm just driving home now through the Peak District, thinking about what a difference I noticed in Megan and Marissa. It was amazing to see the way they engage with Jade, someone they really look up to and admire, and who they see as having a perfect life. And there she was, talking to them about how she had been through exactly what they're going through now. But she's so far out of the other side, it feels like that was a totally different time. I'm so full of hope now for Megan and Marissa, because Jade has shown them that you can learn to control your mental health problem and you can go on to achieve your dreams. And today's been a real reminder of just how important therapy is, how it can completely change your mindset and take you from a really dark place to a really positive one. So I would just say, whatever it is you're going through, just talk. It was the turning point for Jade, and it could be for you too. A huge thank you to Megan and Marissa and to all the staff at the Riverdale Hospital for their great work. And of course, thank you very much to Jade Thirlwall from Little Mix. If you've been affected by what you've heard in this episode, please don't feel like you have to deal with it on your own. Help is available. Go to bbc.co.uk/actionline. I hope you've enjoyed this bonus episode as much as I have. There's going to be a new episode of the Life Hacks podcast on Tuesday. There is every Tuesday with me and Dr. Ada. So if you want to hear more chat like this, don't forget to subscribe to Life Hacks on BBC Sounds.